Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society with my colleague, Professor H.A. McIntyre, International Relations, commenting on Ukraine conflict in a week where we've seen advances by Ukraine, but also barrages by Moscow taking down the electric power of the whole country. What we have now is siege tactics that are successful so far. The headline from London, Ukrainians need to go abroad or we won't survive winter, warns energy chief. This is the energy chief of Ukraine. A civilian should leave Ukraine this winter if they can to help the country deal with a crippling energy crisis, the head of the biggest private Ukrainian power firm warned on Saturday. Timoshenko, chief executive of DTEC, said Ukraine cannot supply enough heat and power for all its population to survive winter because Russian missile attacks had destroyed key infrastructure. Professor, the story right now, as I understand it, is that Ukraine is recommending and helping the young and the elderly to leave the country for heat and electricity, but also to maintain their power grid because they need it for defense, meaning that Ukraine is turning into a failed state, a battlefield, and a battlefield where once you lose electricity, you also lose fresh water. Once you lose fresh water, you lose the ability to sustain your medical supplies, your health for your population. Russia is going to win this either ugly or violently. I can't tell at this point. What is Kiev's point of view, having made this announcement that they can no longer sustain the population?
Well, I think this is, they're simply being realistic. They have, their condition is comparable to the condition of those European countries whom we attacked most heavily in World War II, particularly with aerial attacks. I'll give the example of Germany. And one reason the Marshall Plan was developed and promoted in 1947 was that after peace had been restored, people in the Americas, we expected that the Germans, who are incredibly competent at technology and business, you name it, they were going to come out of their cellar holes where they were living. They were going to stop drinking their ersatz coffee, and they were going to roll up their sleeves and start rebuilding their country. But it turned out that, in fact, they were so stunned, and they had been so thoroughly destroyed and in detail by the by Allied attacks, some of which firebombings and so forth were really unjustifiable, but they were the product of rage at German aggression. These people, the people just, they were numb and they just went on living as they had in this very primitive way. And the Americans said, look, if we pump some money in and give them a little something, then they can get going. And of course, the result... And it was a very bold decision because a lot of people thought that the thing to do with Germany was to make it all back into farmland so that the evil Teutons would not start another war. Well, wars aren't started by peoples. Everybody fights wars, and they have much more complicated origins than that. So it was very wise to trust the Germans. And what did they give us in return the so-called Wirtschaftswunder, the economic miracle that made Germany, which today is smaller than she's been for a very, very, she's about 138,000 square miles, where she was 210,000 and bigger before the war, made her, I think, the number two exporter, but it's certainly a great power in technology, a country having a high standard of living, but not quite at the level of political sophistication. I'm embarrassed to say this when I think of the United States, but there are still some things that are there are still some unfinished things about this, but I think that it would be very, very wise for us to make clear not just to Ukraine, which has simply been pummeled in the same way that we pummeled, and we and the Soviets pummeled Germany. They have just been beaten into the ground, and all of their accumulated capital has been destroyed. Although, as I understand it, you know, their electricity net is functioning again, but they're looking at a very, very cold winter, and I think it's just prudent to say we've got to, you know, we've really got to take this seriously and realistically, and prepare for it. But there's a very strong basic force that you're describing here, which is that a rational person, whether in Ukraine or in Russia, would say the way forward for our country, which is devastated either by war or by simple incompetence and corruption, the way forward is to forget about, is to reconcile to the degree that's possible with the Western countries and become part of their political, of their economic system, which is how you make your economy work, but without any posing any strategic threat to them. But having said that about the long-term prospects, obviously the sooner the war ends, the better for all involved, provided we have a good peace. The Ukrainians have done very well militarily. Reports are that Ukrainian troops have already crossed the Dnieper River from the north to the south, and they have secured bridgeheads. Not clear to me. I've found three places where I think they have, probably in Kherson and to the west, possibly at Novokakhovo, which is about 100 kilometers to the east, and then another 50 or so kilometers at Zaporizhia, where they've long had a position that straddles the river. And the Russian lines are 50 kilometers to the south, and if the Ukrainians are able to get in, they'll be in a position to either move south of those Russian lines or to bring them within artillery and HIMARS range, or I think it's quite likely simply to begin rolling them up and move into Crimea by December, as they're saying. If that were accomplished and it did not explode into some kind of protracted and horrible struggle, I think that if the Russians, as they seem to be, are simply withdrawing east and they're not planning a last stand in Crimea, that would be the end of the war. The alternative would be for the Russians to find 300,000 more troops and armament and cooperation in Minsk, and then they could perhaps launch an attack from the north to the southwest of Ukraine at a time when most Ukrainian and Russian forces are engaged far to the south and east. That would completely complicate everything. It would make a mess again. My hunch is that this is beyond Russian capability, but more importantly, that it is beyond what anybody wants to do. They don't want to, but they see that this is a losing war, and they'd rather forget about it and look at their real interests, both economic and strategic. And as I have suggested previously, I think the idea of making a peace that involved a rebalancing of Eurasia so that Russia drew away from her current the folly of it's really Mr. Putin's his visceral dislike of the United States and his visceral anti-Westernism. He's trying to ally with China. It doesn't work. Never has worked. It's tried, been tried a number of times. And I think that what we've seen, and the weekend is just, we're in the middle of the weekend, but Mr. Xi has been on in public for the first time with his lovely Madam Xi in Bali and then in Thailand for major conferences. His debut on the international stage, standing there speaking himself, interacting with other people and so forth in a diplomatic fashion, has made it painfully clear that this man is just not ready for the big time. He's not ready for Broadway. He's not even ready for New Haven, where they used to try out Broadway shows. Just two things. He managed to lecture Mr. Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister, in such a demeaning and condescending and crude manner that Canada, all the parties there are enraged. They are enraged, and Mr. Trudeau, whose instincts and whose father's instincts were very much friendly toward China, and I don't think Mr. Trudeau is a sort of total Americanophile. I mean, he's realistic, but I don't think he looks up to the United States. He has his own views. He was reduced to the point where when Mr. Xi tried to sort of say some more, that Trudeau just gritted his teeth and shut his mouth. He was so angry, described as being so angry, that he refused to say anything. Now, that is a completely unnecessary alienation of a potentially very important country. Now, Mr. Xi also neglected to shake hands with Mr. Prayut, who is the Prime Minister of Thailand. Thailand is a very, very important country, not least strategically and militarily. And Mr. Prayut has been put there by a military coup, which is essentially anti-democratic and, in a way, anti-Western. And he has been trying to develop a relationship with China. It's actually gone so far that the Thais have put the money down for a Chinese submarine. And they've been fighting now for the last 2 years because the Chinese, the Thais have said, look, the engine of this submarine is no good. We can't you substitute a better engine for it? And the Chinese said, no, it's a perfectly good engine. So they're having a fight. Now, the Thais wouldn't buy a Chinese submarine, you know, in the free market. There are a lot of better submarines they could buy. They're buying this in order to curry favor with the Chinese. Yet Mr. Xi saw that Mr. Prayut had proffered his hand for a very routine handshake. He kind of looked at it, and then he turned and walked away. And Prayut was astonished, but Mrs. Prayut seems to have said to him, look, just, you know, let him do whatever he wants and we'll go. So it wasn't a complete disaster on stage. But I suspect that the long-run implications of this kind of, really, it's a diplomatic slap in the face to a very important Southeast Asian country, it's going to have consequences. Meanwhile, what other good news do we have from Kiev? Well, the first passenger train from Kiev to Kherson, in other words, from the Russian border down to the Crimean border, that train has left. We've had a visit from British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, things are basically going very well militarily for the Ukrainians. But remember, they depend entirely on foreign support for their war effort. This is, and even for managing, for floating their country, this is not unusual. In World War II, the United States basically, we picked up the tab for World War II. So it's not surprising that we're picking up the tab for the Ukraine war, but it does mean that they do not have autonomous control over finance.
And you introduce an important topic, Professor. You mentioned the Marshall Plan before. It's not entirely impossible that this war will end not because of a battlefield success or failure, but because the prosperity of Western Europe and the United States and Eurasia depends upon a resolution. So I'd like to turn to what I've learned about the thinking in Europe about a Marshall Plan. This would be centered in the European Union and NATO. So let us go to the third capital of our consideration, Brussels. This is Professor H.A. Mackinder, International Relations. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No